So, who has the Leslie Smith underdog pick? Who is the Mexican dude and the lesbian chick? Everybody say you mean Lesbo and the Bean. Who's that out there living they dream? Lesbo and the Bean.
Howdy doody, everybody.
Howdy doody.
So we had a little bit of a crappy weekend, and unfortunately we weren't able to get out that Sunday cast, but we're going to make it up to you guys here and really just shoot through some of the stuff and get into that dirty-ass breakdown we got.
Sorry about my migraine, everybody. Lesbo suffers from migraines.
So if anyone's got some quick cures, definitely let us know. Tweet it at us, hit us on Facebook, wherever you can. But either way, we had a hell of a weekend for the card. Not being what we thought it was going to be, I thought it overperformed. There was quite a few finishes, quite a bit of scrappy fights. We're not going to go super deep and heavy into every fight, but I do feel like someone we got to profile is that Israel Adesanya against Rob Wilkinson. I was saying you guys are going to be seeing this kid's name because he really has pretty unique striking and is very
here. Wait, let's start dynamic. At the beginning. We don't have to talk about Jamu Abe. Nothing happened there. Kinyo Ishihara, blah blah blah. Ishihara looked all right. Still not great. Not a world burner. We said
yeah,
everywhere.
I'm gonna really start to fade that move.
Ross Pearson, Hirota,
decision. Pearson,
Formiga, Nguyen, pretty much exactly.
Actually, I had Nguyen on that, and he got submitted round three. Formiga is one of those
hype train killer. He said it on the show.
Right.
Volkanovski, Kennedy, blah, blah, blah. And right now where you were talking about Stylebender.
Stylebender. One thing, though, that I feel like a lot of people are going to jump on is where he was expensive on DK and he was expensive minus three. So people understand that he was going to be one. But what I saw is Wilkinson doesn't have the best takedowns and was able to take Adesanya down multiple times, which an American wrestler, you ain't going to get up. Adesanya was using very basic get-ups and they were working well, but I do think that Wilkinson is much lower caliber of grappler, and there's exploitation there. There's going to be money be made betting on and against Adesanya. Wilkinson, he might have one more bout in there, maybe not. He's
just there for the flag.
Gas, and we called it. He was going to gas, and he did. He didn't like to take punches.
I couldn't agree with you more. I feel like the Stylebender, there's so much money to be made betting against him.
Eventually.
And everyone has jumped on this train. It might be the quickest jump I've seen across the board where everybody's talking about this guy, and everyone's jumping on, and everyone's talking about how amazing he is.
Yep.
He fought Rob Wilkinson, everyone.
Exactly. And so
are you
people
kidding?
Are way too high.
And you're so right. He got taken down three times each before he
was
finished.
Not too hard.
Yes, the Stylebender did get right back up. He wiggled his way out.
Sure.
But against a better caliber guy, even slightly better, he's going to get held down one of those three. And what's going to happen to his gas tank? I think there is money to be made betting against him going forward. And I'm not so quick to jump on the mini John Jones hype train.
Actually, he tweets out non-John Jones. He hates being compared to John Jones because he feels like he's...
It doesn't matter. Everyone's
staff.
Talking about it.
He looks like John Jones.
He looks like little mini John Jones. Little
but
mini bones.
So did Aljamain Sterling. Everyone called him the mini John Jones and Chris Beal. Anyone who's black, they're like, oh, damn, that's a new John Jones.
I don't think that's true. This guy actually looks like John Jones.
He does.
Aljamain Sterling never looked like John Jones. He's lanky.
That's
like young John Jones.
That's
but
what they say, though. Do you see it? So, on to the next fight. We ended up having Kim versus Damian Brown. Two serviceable guys. With that split decision, Kim ended up really showing his toughness. He's going to be out for a little while longer due to the fact that he broke his leg, I believe, in the middle of the second round. And kept fighting that fight on a broken leg. I retweeted a couple tweets of that fight night. He was definitely in the hospital. And bad leg injury. Tough, tough dude. Brown. Time to get on out of town.
Damian Brown was already online asking for his next fight.
Yeah, no, I think it's 0-3 now.
And I was really thinking, dude, I can't even think of anyone worth a name that should fight down to your number. Like,
the level, right?
Where you need to get on out of here, Damian Brown.
Unfortunately, that is the situation. So then we had Tyson.
This is who I think the biggest winner of the night, who everyone should be talking about, a hype train worth jumping on, is Tyson Pedro over the hype bender, in my opinion.
Interesting.
I thought he was the winner of the night.
I thought he was getting smothered a little bit by Sherov. Sherov, whatever the hell.
Sheferov, to me, he's an underrated guy, and he has that wrestling, that Russian wrestling.
The Sambo. But that, well, that was a nasty Kimura that he was getting pinned up against the fence, Pedro, and then he jumped on that Kimura and almost ripped his arm out of its socket. Beautiful submission. I'm a little still hesitant on Pedro. I think he does really, really well off of the top game, being on top. But the few times we've seen him off his back, he just can't get up sometimes. So in matchups, he's very matchup specific for me. Then we ended up with Sharapov as well. That dude is like 58 years old. He's going to get a couple more fights, but I don't think it's going to be too much longer for him in his career. On to Jake Matthews defeating Jin Liang in a big upset. Matthews outgrinded this. In this fight, we saw one of the dirtiest tactics this sport has ever seen, and I've been watching from pretty much day one. Back when there used to be allowed ball shots, there still was an eye gouging, and Jin Liang stuck both hands in, there's multiple photos out there, and gouged the eye. That the reason that it's so disgusting is not only that we have the rules, but that's a career-altering injury that's intentionally imposed. Not even, I don't believe that a point should have been taken. I believe that it should have been an immediate disqualification. That's something you don't fuck around with.
I not only think, I'm a person who believes I don't care if it's an accident or not. Finger in eye, point taken. That's how I feel immediately from the smallest.
Right.
So with intent, especially with the submission looming, you're done. You're disqualified. Matthew should have won that fight by disqualification, in my opinion. And it would have pissed me off a little bit at the time. But once I saw that eye gouge, that is career ending, and we cannot have that in our sport.
Right.
It is. There's no room for it. There's no room. There's no accidental room. Tuck your fingers in. Tuck your fingers in. If you start taking a point every time one of those, in quote, accidental eye pokes happens, watch how quickly it... And I'm the same of the nut shot. I don't care if it's accident or not. I don't care if you were aiming for the high thigh. Maybe you're not that good at point taken. It ruins a fight. It could ruin it and change a fight.
A career.
Agree. Especially with the eyes. Especially with the eyeballs.
There's been
fighters.
Michael
Bisping. There's he didn't multiple. Get poked, but he got that TRT.
So, Jin Liang, the interesting thing that I think with him is the UFC, I believe, is... I mean, they saw the photo as much as we have. It's been a hot topic all over. They might not give him another contract. They might just say, out of here. And I think that that would not be the worst thing. And unfortunately for him, Jin Liang is the most hyped, most prospected Chinese fighter out there right now. And now his contract with one loss is potentially up in the air. And it's his own fault. So, on to Tai Tuivasa defeating...
And there's people, Jake Matthews was not even... He's like, yeah, it's fighting. Sometimes people do think... No.
No, dude.
No.
No, dude. That's fucked.
And then, could the ref get in trouble too, please? If you aren't in a position, it didn't happen for 1 second, that eye gouge. That was at least...
It was long. He held it in
Let's say, bare minimum, it was 3 full juicy seconds. Bare minimum. 3 full juicy seconds.
Oh, yeah.
Your ref, you need to look at that guy's face. You do not have control of that ring. I don't do that job. And so people are like, I don't want to say it. It's really hard in there. I am saying it because I don't do that job. You're the professional ref, not me.
Right.
That guy could gouge out Matthew's eyes.
Right.
But
right,
Jake
right,
Matthews
right.
looked good in that fight to me.
Yeah, I would
agree.
Like,
he's coming around.
He's definitely growing a lot, and he's had much better competition. He's had a few surgeries that have supposedly helped him. The juice is flowing with that young man, and he's still got room to grow. So, we go to Tai Tuivasa defeating Cyril Asker.
Speaking of juice, I like to call Tai Tuivasa the Kool-Aid man.
Yeah, is it because he likes to drink out of a shoe? Did you see him do that shoey?
No, he just has a Kool-Aid man body.
He is a bit bigger. Even though I feel like there is money to be made on Tai eventually due to that gas tank, it didn't have to show here with the 2-minute finish of Cyril Asker. I don't, even Tai, even though Tai hits hard, he hasn't completely flatlined someone. And Asker, there were so many times in this fight that I wanted it stopped as well. In the first minute, I was like, please stop the fight. Asker ate a few horrible shots, was out on his feet, and Tai just kept coming in and throwing elbows over the top, throwing. They would land, but they wouldn't buckle him. So is it Asker's having a great chin, or is it Tai who's the two guys had to swarm him for over 20 or 30 punches in a row to get him out of there? This happened twice with Coulter as well. And Asker doesn't have the grip. He has an RHN. So...
It's not just, the reason I like Ty though for a big guy, it's not just punches. Uh-huh. It's a full-on onslaught. You get the elbows, he's big on the knees, he has some nasty high knees for such an enormous chubby guy.
But what I think with that as well is that he's been able to hurt both of these opponents so early, and when I watched his previous fights, guys that were able to duck a couple of those shots and make it a fight, those elbows don't come. Because he's teeing off. He teed off 20 strikes.
Yeah.
And he didn't get a shot thrown back at him. Anyone's going to look good there. And I feel like that happened for Adesanya as well. He just
Could
had him up on
the
fence.
Could that be the way he plays it, though? That
he's trying to set him up on the cage to do that?
And
yeah,
maybe
sure.
Just, I think one thing that we notice with the fighters once, like maybe he has this ring IQ where he's not swarming. He is being totally patient. So because we see so many of the guys, they're totally hurt. All of a sudden, they come with a looping punch and knock the other guy out. And you're like, what? And so maybe at his weight class, he is just showing this new type of patience that we're not used to seeing. Usually the guys just want to swarm and get it over with, but he really hasn't been in the ring long enough yet for that to be a desperation.
Sure.
I like Ty Tuivasa.
I think so too. I think he can still beat a lot of people, but again, I'm like, I could see a path to victory against him. And if there's a path to victory, I would say the co-main event is exactly the same path that you would use to defeat.
I gotta see him get taken down more.
Exactly. So what I was saying, Curtis Blaydes beating Mark Hunt. That's the way that you beat Ty Tuivasa. That's the way you beat Mark Hunt.
We don't know yet if that's the way you beat Ty Tuivasa.
I think it is. I think if Blaydes got in there with Ty, the same thing would happen. Blaydes might eat a couple really hard shots and be like, oh shit, I can take this guy down. Made for a boring fight, but it was the perfect game plan to beat Mark Hunt. People don't beat Mark Hunt striking because he's a master striker.
Can I see that fight? I want to see Ty Tuivasa versus Curtis Blaydes.
All day.
That's a great fight.
But I think Ty's got another fight or two before he gets to Blaydes. Blaydes is, he's fighting those top level guys.
Yeah.
But I see a fun matchup
there. I heard
there.
Something and I thought it was super interesting. I don't even know who said it, so I don't want to give credit to the wrong person. They were saying if you took Curtis Blaydes and Francis Ngannou, you have the perfect heavyweight fighter. But Curtis Blaydes sucks at stand-up, and Ngannou sucks at a ground game, and they both do the other kind of phenomenal. Uh-huh. And if you could mix that, it would be,
Oh, that's interesting. I could totally see
that.
And
then the other thing is, for the rematch of the Curtis Blaydes versus Ngannou, and they're so interested because that was a doctor stoppage, not a finish.
Yep.
And it did go into round two.
Yep.
And Curtis is one of the few guys to fare, so there are people that are asking for that rematch now, and I'm interested in it.
Oh, totally.
I wouldn't have been before.
Totally. I'm more interested after I actually saw the growth of Blaydes. Not only did he show his fight IQ by eating a couple hard shots and then realizing I can take this guy down. But the factor that we were saying with team elevation, he was doing Curtis Blaydes was doing TJ Dillashaw footwork in there at the heavyweight level. He came in and traced that C. He came in, stepped in and out. What I didn't like when Blaydes did this is that the first few times he did it, he didn't throw any strikes, and Mark Hunt immediately picked up on that and started throwing every time Blaydes moved towards him. But then once Blaydes realized, oh, I can get it in and out, he started ducking underneath those punches and the takedowns came easy. As soon as Mark Hunt hit the ground, Blaydes had him wrapped up like a baby in a blanket. Well, you can see them little legs just sticking out.
The same thing, you're high on Blaydes and I'm a little higher on Ty. One of the reasons is because I felt like Curtis Blaydes never showed knockout power at all in that whole fight. And he laid clean punches. He laid some nice combinations. He had some fast hands that he hadn't had in previous fights. I just didn't see any power there.
Interesting. I am excited either way for Curtis Blaydes where he goes. Mark Hunt, he's been having troubles with UFC. I don't think he should go yet, but I think that he's going to get any excuse the UFC has to push him out. They're going to try to do that, and they're already starting with getting him on a few losses.
I just feel like UFC, Mark Hunt puts asses in chairs, especially when you're fighting on the other side of the world. Can you just throw a shill in there, just a stand-up shill? Can we just let Mark Hunt...
I don't think
win.
So, because he's threatened to sue and has sued them, and they're just kind of like, okay. They're going to give him another tough-ass fight. Wrestler, probably, the perfect stylistic matchup against Hunt, and we know that Mark Hunt does not wrestle. He talks about
it openly. I love Mark Hunt.
It's unfortunate. Unfortunate.
And the final fight before we get on to some other things.
So, we had the main event. Yoel Romero, underdog. Lat B play of the week. Leslie Smith, underdog, coming through again. We were telling you, Rockhold is a better all-around martial artist, but his chin isn't up, isn't up to par, and Yoel Romero could just finish the fight later in the rounds. I think I called for four or five, fifth round, you called for in that range, and he got it done in the third with a left, the exact same punch Bisping landed, which we said on the show, if Bisping can land that left, Yoel Romero seeing that, and he's going to try to land that, and that's what started off the beginning of the end. But prior to that, Luke Rockhold really looked good coming out of American Top Team. He was throwing a lot of great leg kicks, a lot of body shots, being very elusive. And in that first round, both fighters hurt their legs. In the second round, I remember telling you guys, like, Yoel's leg is way more hurt than people think. He's really trying to show it off. And after the fight, Yoel's like, he broke my leg. He broke my leg in the first round. And Luke wasn't throwing too much either because it hurt his leg. But
he had Yoel shins. Checked two
yeah.
of those. And it hurt.
You
it
could see Rockhold.
Rockhold's shin up.
Yep.
And then Rockhold was stopped throwing those. They were so successful for round one.
It hurt both fighters.
It hurt them both.
It hurt both fighters. But those leg kicks are really making prominence in every single fight. Every single fight.
Something I like, though, about this fight is you got to see the consequence of those leg kicks for maybe the first time to even the guy that's doing them right, like Luke.
Yeah.
You got to see the consequences of, oh, that's why you don't throw leg kicks an entire fight. We always ask, like, in round three, why aren't they still throwing those leg kicks? Why aren't they? Because he hurts, too.
Yeah.
Throwing your bat just because you're the one that hit another bat.
I've had that same shin bruise because Yoel Romero did get x-rays. It's not broken, but he has a deep tissue shin bruise. I've had the exact same thing, and I was out for 3 weeks, and I had shin pads on when it happened. I couldn't imagine going shin to shin, muscle to muscle, that big fatty muscle in front of your shin. Imagine that just being bruised to the core. You don't realize how much it hurts when you step on it until it hurts. So what do we go here? Yoel Romero, people are saying, already earned the next title shot. Rockhold, is that shin, he could do many, many, many other things. He's saying he's going to move up to 205 as soon as Cormier moves up to heavyweight. And when we saw that weight cut as well, that Yoel missed by
3 or 4 pounds.
3 pounds. He ended up not making the weight. Rockhold was hurt. Rockhold was giving that interview and talking about being professional and shit. But to me, Rockhold looked like Johnny Hendricks when Johnny Hendricks was having trouble. And I put a bunch of money up against Hendricks, same situation here, because I was like, Yoel Romero, stop cutting, he ain't hurting. Luke Rockhold hurt himself.
Yoel is something special. He doesn't age. There's actually, this is exciting for any fans of Yoel out there, because he is pretty odd, funny guy. I don't think he means to be as funny as he is, but he's just...
Yeah.
Joe Rogan's going to do a podcast with Yoel Romero.
I love it.
Joey Diaz is going to be there to translate.
I love it. I will watch
that. Isn't
that
amazing?
I'll listen to that.
All Joey Diaz's idea, because he's Cuban too.
Yeah.
So he's like, let me be there if it ever gets weird. You ask the questions. If it ever gets weird, I'll translate for you. So I am actually really interested in that podcast. Yoel, I don't want to see him fight Whitaker yet, because didn't he just get knocked out?
He didn't get knocked out, but he lost a decision to Whitaker.
Did it? Was it just a decision?
I thought it was.
I don't know. You're probably right. But I don't want to see that fight right away yet. And he did miss the weight, so it defeats the purpose of the interim belt you're trying to build if you say he doesn't get the interim belt, but then he turns around and gets the title shot anyway. Defeats mm-hmm. the whole purpose of the belt. You might as well just wash that belt out of the division altogether. Luke Rockhold, I'm going to say something that I feel like I've been saying for a little while. He's done in the UFC. I know people hate to say that, hear it. Kelvin beats him.
I think if he moves up to 205, we're going to see a dramatic change in that chin, though. We've seen it with multiple fighters in the lighter weight classes that were known to be chinny, moved up to 155 or 70, and all of a sudden they're eating.
Robert Whittaker being one of them. Look at him at 170 to 185.
Whittaker, I was going to say.
Dos Anjos.
Yeah. Matthews, Lee. I could keep going.
Yeah.
There's tons. So I think Rockhold ain't necessarily there, but I do think that weight cut is affecting more than people say, because he's a big fucking guy.
He's tall.
He's tall,
tall. He had a huge reach advantage. To me, that's the only good things he was doing in the whole entire fight was only because of that reach advantage. The only times he was tagging up Yoel.
There still need to be skill behind him, but yeah, it did
help. Purely because of that reach.
It did really help.
I just kind of think he's rinsed. I think people have figured him out. He's not... he's not as good. He's like a lesser version of Wonder Boy to me at this point.
Uh-huh.
He does have obviously a way better ground game, and he talks about it, but it's just that ground game in the UFC, and I really think that the Woodley, Maya, that it changed things. I think there's a game plan now for those, that specialty, yeah. And that's, you know, the American wrestling, and so I feel... Oh, I'm just kind of falling out on Luke Rockhold. I think he's lost his mojo.
I can see that.
And but you know what I am interested in? I am interested now because Weidman's coming off a win, and I don't know if it's silly to other people. I would like to see Weidman Rockhold again because that first fight was so weird.
I agree. That'd be a fun one. And yeah, I think that that's not a bad play, a rematch there.
And I want to see Yoel fight... Kelvin, and the winner of that gets Whitaker. That's what I would like to see. And we can get off this.
All right, we can put that
UFC
one to rest.
221, folding it up, tucking it to bed, putting it away.
All right. So, for our breakdown.
Are we going to jump into the breakdown?
Do we have any, I guess, Twitter stuff to go through?
Oh my gosh, I feel there's so much going on in the world of the UFC, but we talked a lot about it during this because I know the eye gouges were a big part of it. I think the Brian Ortega...
Frankie Edgar
went over that a little bit.
They were calling for it. They were calling for a few other fights. So it is official. Frankie Edgar is going to fight Brian Ortega. Frankie Edgar has everything to lose, and Ortega doesn't, other than his undefeated record. Very interesting stylistic matchup. Edgar said that he doesn't feel it's a big change from Max Holloway because they're both taller, lankier fighters. But I would say Ortega's way bigger. Way bigger and does come at the game a little bit more uniquely. The striking, though, I give to Frankie Edgar all day. The takedowns, yes, but the thing is, Ortega's so nasty with those submissions. And Ortega does give away rounds. He's given away multiple rounds. I do think Frankie Edgar can drown him in deep water and just win a decision, how he usually tends to, by just boxing him up and staying off of that ground and staying away from that wrestling jumping over stuff. Cub Swanson is an okay wrestler, but he ain't no Frankie Edgar type of wrestler.
And that's the other thing with Brian Ortega, with everybody's jumping on the hype train.
Yep.
They're like, he's the best. Brian Ortega's been tagged up in every one of his fights, and he has yet to fight a knockout artist. That is going to be real problems for him when he fights someone with power in their hands.
Sure.
He hasn't
Which is not
really.
Edgar, but...
It isn't Frankie. Frankie does have clean boxing, but he does... I see this fight being really similar to Woodley Maya. I see a lot of that being
100%.
The same.
Yep.
The only thing I don't like about this fight that isn't going to go the same is I just feel like Brian Ortega is going to be like a foot and a half taller than Frankie.
He's huge.
And that standover guillotine that he can
get.
Exactly, I just see it happening too quickly for Frankie to do anything about it. If he can get that on Cub's taller than Frankie.
But that's where I'm saying, I feel like Frankie Edgar's wrestling is so much better that he's going to be able to defend that, and don't think Frankie Edgar and his camp are automatically defending those guillotines right now.
It's just the height that makes me so nervous.
It's a big size, but Frankie Edgar's fought bigger guys his entire career.
And Brian Ortega, the older he gets, he will not be in this weight class for much longer.
Guaranteed.
He is way too tall for this weight class.
Guaranteed. Other Twitter stuff that went down.
What about Jeff Mayweather on Floyd moving to MMA and say, what about if he whoops up CM Punk's ass?
Wow. That's a fight that Mayweather could actually potentially win. For reals. For reals. Because he could outbox and not be taken down.
I think CM Punk has that fight.
Floyd Mayweather knows how to throw bows. We've talked about it multiple times. He does it cheap.
Punk has enough training on Floyd and the mixed martial arts, you know, the few years. I don't even know what the belts would be, a blue belt.
Right.
Maybe a low brown with the amount of attention he's had at the gym. And Floyd, let's say he's a yellow. But, you know, he's probably worked with mixed martial artists. He's got taught things. Probably learns it a lot quicker than Phil. A lot quicker than CM Punk.
Yep.
But that ground game and the weight advantage is what CM Punk has.
What's just to me, it's a media play by Floyd Mayweather. I don't think he's going to even fight in MMA. I think that he understands how to keep his name relevant, and he's getting us, and he's really good at understanding
how to manipulate. What about for $1 billion? Because there's talks of him and the Conor, the second fight. Conor's in talks for $500 million for the second fight.
In boxing.
For $500 million.
Right.
So if they could offer, like, the Zuffa Boxing,
yep.
they're all linked up. If they could offer $1 billion to Floyd for two fights, yep, one MMA with weird rules, and then one boxing. Anything for money for Floyd, right? Yeah,
exactly. What I think, though, in MMA is that we know he has brittle-ass hands. Breaks him in boxing gloves all the time. What do you think a 4-ounce glove's going to do? He's going to throw one overhand with weight because he's going to be like, oh, I'm going to be able to punch this guy and go, ah! And then he's going to be fucked. He ain't going to have that hand.
You and don't MMA's think he could, different. Like, butt scoot over Phil or Coach or what's it, of CM Punk, butt scoots over. Maybe he worm crawls on his belly because you can't just kick him right in the head, soccer kick him. That's illegal.
Yeah. Oh.
He keeps all four so things gross on the ground the whole time. I
don't even feel like it's MMA talk. Like, it's such a fucking
it's
freak
so
show.
Crazy what's
it's
happening.
It's so nuts.
What absolutely world are we nuts in? There's a friggin' Tesla attached to the front of a rocket ship that's tens orbiting of millions space of dollars were spent on just to do, and Floyd Mayweather and CM Punk are talking about fighting. We are in the future. This is Idiocracy.
This is very, very true.
Okay, what else is going on since that's not even MMA talk? It had to be out there.
I guess a couple shout-outs. A couple shout-out to, we got to say, our girl, Leslie Smith, liking some of our tweets out there.
Finally.
Listening.
Finally.
Hopefully she's listening. Hopefully she knows that she's got reputable fans here that understand.
Our all-time favorite underdog, Leslie Smith herself.
So, with that shout-out, we also have J-Pan, the lovely city of Tokyo, out there giving us some love, getting some listens out of there. I'm a little familiar with the Yamaguchi Prefecture, so all you Japanese people, you know what I'm talking about. With another shout-out, we got some more Nevada listens as well. We got to say that.
I like it.
Nevada's got some good people out there, apparently, that listen to Lab B. With other shout-outs, was there also a Boss Logic out there?
A little Boss Logic-like for the Lab B.
Sending a little love as well. Hopefully listening as well. It looked like via Twitter, Boss Logic listens to Lab B. And we know he's got good taste. We know he's getting all sorts of contracts with UFC and other organizations due to quality work.
Did you hear about a big fight sign that I know you're going to be excited about? I think it's for UFC 222. It might be 223. You're going to be so excited.
No, I haven't.
Bruce Leroy versus Lobov.
Oh, my God. That's such a trash fight. Oh, my gosh.
You want to talk about Mayweather versus CM Punk more?
It's not a trash fight because they both are low, but they're both barely hanging on to them UFC careers. Both of them. That's a dirty-ass fight. Oh, that's so dirty.
I am sure there's 1,000 more things we could talk about, but everyone is itching to get into the breakdown.
Breakdown. We have a UFC fight night. 126 coming out of Austin, Texas. This is going to be a 12 card bout coming at you on Fight Pass and FS1. So,
if you're going to fight in Texas, you got to have a cowboy in the band.
And leading it is going to be a cowboy out of Colorado and a Hawaiian leading the card. So I think the UFC is really doing some really weird stuff. I know that people have been falling out of fights. They're trying to bring the most eyes in. But there's been some really interesting matchups going around. And Evil Twin was talking about this a bit a while ago. Is this a direct correlation of Joe Silva being out of there? Is this now Mick Maynard? Because now it's other people putting these matchups together. And they obviously have a completely different point of view than we do. Where they're bringing eyes with Donald Cerrone because he has a big following. Yancey's got a whole island behind him. But to me, if you're in Austin, Texas, you put James Vick or Derek Lewis, native Texonians, in the motherfucking Texans in the main event, regardless. Like, that's who people are coming to watch and selling out the arena. It's people from Texas. What the fuck is going on?
The only thing I will say is Donald Cerrone kind of surpasses all the state lines, like
the cowboy, because it's American cowboy.
He's American cowboy, Budweiser, open a can of America. They love him. He's big enough to bring the most amount of eyes of anybody else on this card. That's the reason I believe he's in that spot. I love that the Black Beast and James Vick are also even on this card. I love that that's even, because I'm having an issue with the UFC lately. They bring in like a couple of these stars, you know, like Robert Whittaker, no one planned on him falling out of Australia, but right. It's like we're doing all this stuff to UFC to get into certain fighters' home states. So it'd be like us ending up in Hawaii and Max Holloway and Yancey fall out. I keep feeling like that's happening to us in fights where I almost like this way where you put like three or four guys from the state on there. And then so if some of them fall out in between, like, is Derek Lewis going to make this fight?
Good point. There's a couple intangibles we have to think about here.
You know Donald's going to fight. You know no matter what. He'll, even if he has to get wheeled into the ring, he's like, let's do this.
Factors that we do have to take into consideration. Elevation isn't a factor in Austin, Texas. We're going to be pretty flat on the globe or flat earth, whatever.
But gentrification is. Oh, sorry. That's for a different show.
Oh, that is the other, other cast. So, with the localness, so what are other factors we like to take? This is going to be in the States. Judges. I do feel like Texas has given...
I have to say, honestly, the Australian judges impressed the shit out of me.
They did a good job.
Overall, there wasn't too many robberies, and they didn't just favor hometown people. There was, like, some close splits that I was surprised went to the other person. So, Texas, it doesn't leak in my head like we're about to go into the New York Commission. I don't think, oh, shit, yeah, we're going into Texas.
I don't think they're too bad. So...
What rule set is it going to be this time?
That's what I haven't been able to figure out, because that was going to be an intangible. Is it going to be the new adopted California rules, the old rules, or the Pride rules? I don't fucking know. When we find out, we'll probably end up sending a tweet like, all right, these are the rules, whatever's going down. But from the bottom to the top, we're starting off with Tim Williams versus Oscar Pitoja in the middleweight division. Pitoja's being 10-0-1, winning his debut against Jonathan Wilson. Against Ted Williams debuting 15-3 record, he's coming off of a win in CFFC. He was also on The Ultimate Fighter, I believe season 18 and then season like 20. Maybe I'm wrong with those, but he was on the comeback season as well. He actually finished Serbian Steel in the show, but those are considered exhibition bouts, so that's why you're not seeing him on his record. He also lost a few in there. Lost to Anthony Smith twice via submission and knockout. Williams comes in with a very wrestling-heavy game. Gets you up against the fence, underhooks, pulls you down. Lands elbows really well from the top. Controls really well from the top. Has a good gas tank. Does tend to wear a little bit. And he's going to end up being the New Jersey guy against the Polish Pitoja. Pitoja definitely is... coming in with a lot of accolades. A lot of people have been heavy off of him. I didn't like his gas tank. He ended up winning a decision against Wilson. His ground game is really, really good. But it's still not American. It's not Tim Williams. Tim has been grinding with much higher caliber wrestlers for me. Pitoja on the ground is where he makes his money as well. Especially off of his back. He has a good submission game. But most of his competition is overseas. We do like Polish fighters here at LatB. But for me, and I'm picking my card again live here.
Live on the air.
I got Tim Williams for the moderate underdog in a decision. I think the American wrestling's going to come through, even though it goes to the ground. It's Pitoja's world. I think Ted Williams can just hold him there, hold him on bottom, and ride out three rounds. Decision for me. What do you think goes on in this one?
I was high on Pitoja going into his last fight against Jonathan Williams, and I think he was Jonathan Wilson. I think he was a heavy underdog on that.
Uh-huh.
I love a Polish fighter. I'm not too into, or do I know enough about Tim Williams, and I'm going to go with the guy with experience here and go with the Polish guy from Gdańsk, Poland. I think he's going to get a head kick in round two and cleanly knock out Mr. Williams. I'm going to stay away from this first fight of the night.
So, let be rule play all day. We usually stay away from these, and there's a couple other ones we usually stay away from, but it'll probably end up working out for you.
What is this Garbujo fight we're about to go into?
Next, we have a welterweight bout, 170 pounds, Alex Morono versus Josh Berkman. Morono is 13-4 coming off of a split decision to Nakamura. And Josh Berkman is coming off of a four-fight losing streak against Dober, Prezeres, and a couple other guys, Otto and Felder. Berkman moved up from the 155 division a long time ago. He's 28-16, came in as just being a strong guy with heavy hands. And for me, the game has just passed Berkman up. Berkman at 37 is definitely old at this 170. You can do that 37, 38 in the heavy 85 weight. Light heavyweight range, not at these. And he spent most of his career at 55, so he's really like a 55er. That's 37. Morono, at 27, is 10 years younger. He has a controversial bout. He beat James Mutasari, where he was a big underdog. He's had multiple fights in the UFC as well. He has a split decision over Kyle Nook 4 months ago against Nakamura. I think Nakamura is very underrated as a fighter, and I had Nakamura in that as well. Has a good gas tank. Morono gas tank isn't bad, but he can't get outworked. Berkman, though, as of late, hasn't had the best gas tank either. Berkman loads up on too many of his shots. Morono on the ground is a beast. Striking, he's serviceable, but it's really just his grit. Morono can eat punches and keep walking through, and he can eat heavy punches. He has through many other people. The last thing to go is power for Berkman, but I think that's the last thing he's holding on to. And with a 4-fight losing streak, there's just no way I put Berkman anywhere. I'm going to go with Morono decision. I could even see myself in a submission round 2 or 3 for Morono. I'm going to speckle Morono. I'm fairly confident that he's going to get the job done here. How do you feel this one goes down?
I have Morono decision as well. Josh Berkman should not be in here anymore. My guess is that he's just taking fights when the UFC needs to, so they're keeping him in the roster, or they're just using him to build up their young guys. It's painful. He didn't have a good chin at 155. Now at 170, it's just dismal. It's dismal. It's a dismal, bleak view. This is nothing to do with Morono at all, so I might put him on one or two cards. This is a total fade for Josh Berkman. It would not matter who he's going up against at this point. I got Morono decision.
So Morono is a minus 275 favorite here. That's almost 3-1. That might be a little heavy. Evil Twin is also all over fucking fading Berkman. He doesn't care who it is. He's just fading Berkman. So I think that's going to be a fairly standard play. On to the bantamweights, though.
I had to pull up my DraftKings and look at those prices.
Oh, are they up finally? Because last time I was checking, they were not. Just kept giving me the reserve your card early.
Oh, maybe.
Is it still on it?
Fighter up.
We got lines up. So the last two fights we went over was actually Tim Williams versus Pantoja.
So Williams is 7-1.
Ooh, I might play him on a couple there.
Pantoja 9-1. So
there has to be a finish.
Would be your good underdog. And then Morono is 8,800 versus Josh Berkman's 7-4. And I agree with you, Berkman should be cheaper than Williams.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
It's kind of a crazy...
I'd agree with that.
So that is that for now. We can move on to the lady fight.
We have the Bantam 135ers. We have Sarah Morris versus Lucy Padilova. Both of these ladies are experienced in the octagon. Morris coming in with a 5-2 record, coming off of a Ashley Evans Smith win armbar 5 months ago, but losing to Jessica Andrade in a decision and beating Alex Dufresne in a decision. Padilova's coming off of a win against Jin Kyung Yim. She lost to Lena Landsberg, and she's rattled off quite. She's only has 2 losses. She's 7-2. Padilova comes in with a good ground attack, has a good gas tank, and is scrappy off of her back, throws up a lot of triangles and arm bars. But Morris on the ground is where she makes her money as well. The younger fighter out of the Czech Republic, 23-year-old Padilova, against the British Columbian, 29-year-old Morris. At a Tushido MMA, I don't know much about their camps. What I did remember is that this is going to be a roll fest. Both women want to get this fight to the ground because both of them feel like they have better advantages. For me, Morris is better on top, and Padilova's better off of her back. So it's going to be a really interesting dynamic at who gets a submission first, because they're going to be playing in each other's strength and they're going to have to be countering each other. I don't think this is going to score a lot of points because they don't tend to throw a lot of punches. Both of their striking is ultra conservative, very basic, nothing flashy. Again, they just want to get it to the ground. I'm going to go with Morris here and a slight underdog. I like the tenacity of the takedowns for Padilova. This is a tough fight. I'm going to go with Morris as an underdog here. Decision. I'm going to stay away from this fight all day. I don't think either one of these ladies makes the money away. I see a decision happening. Most lady fights stay as a decision, and I got Morris. I'm not confident about that. How do you feel?
You know, I had Morris decision going into this, and the number one reason I picked her in the decision, this is crazy, is her loss to Jessica Andrade is the best of all these women's fights put together. But it's Jessica Andrade almost 3 years ago. Not the same woman we know today.
Right.
So then it changes back to Pudlova because I really liked her Lena Landsberg fights as far as everything she's put together, which was also a loss. So then when I was going in my head, I'm like, okay, Andrade better than Lena Landsberg for a loss. And then I was like, huh, Andrade, that's small. That's 115. Lena Landsberg, that's big. She fought Cyborg. So then it made me switch to, I'm going to go with the girl who has more experience with the bigger fighters. So I'm going to stick with Lucy Pudlova, which if she's the favorite right now, it doesn't surprise me. I'm going to totally stay away from it.
Minus 160.
I see that. I just think being the bigger woman coming into this fight, she's not that much bigger though. They both weighed in at 135, their last fight. I like everything that you're saying, though. I like Mariah's, too. I think stay away from it. But really, it's a stay away because neither woman has proved that they're worth a dollar.
Agreed. On DK, how expensive do these ladies come out?
Let's see if I could. Oh, drop
it! Every time you got to re-log time. In, come they on. Need to make that faster.
I know. Totally like, somebody took my iPad in between. Okay, so for these women, I got, what are their last names? Pudlova and Morais. Pudlova is 8'5", so people might be seeing a little bit what I'm seeing, but I, for the cheaper price of 7'7", I like Morais better in that if and I'm going to stay away from this.
Look at their average scores. Morais has a 50.3 compared to Pudlova's 54.5. Think of the value there if you want to even fix those, because the weird thing with those averages is fighters can have a finish in the first round and they get 100 points all of a sudden against a shit fighter, and it'll throw some of those
off. I don't see either girl finishing, so I do see that Marais maybe could be a wager gauger later on.
I could potentially see that as well. On to the flyweights, though. We're going back to the guys. We have Jacoby Sanchez versus Roberto Sanchez, and this is going to be a dirty Sanchez kind of event.
I love it!
Jacoby coming in with a 11-2 record against a 7-1 Roberto. Off the show, Roberto Sanchez has lost a few fights coming into it off of the Contender Series. He still got a shot and lost his debut short notice to Joseph Morales, rear naked choke submission, but he actually beat in an exhibition bout, or didn't beat, he lost to Benitez out of Alpha Male, the kid that they're giving a lot of hype, Gilbert Benitez or whatever. He went to a split decision, lost to him. So a lot of people were coming in with a ton of hype on Sanchez. I thought he was going to look better than he did. His gas tank was atrocious in his last fight. And Jacoby Sanchez really can put people in that deep water, has a good gas tank. He is also debuting in the UFC, or he is debuting in the UFC compared to Roberto Sanchez, but Jacoby has fought multiple UFC caliber fighters. He's also likes to get it to the ground if he can, but striking wise, he has a little bit of power, has good angles. I do think that Roberto is the lesser of the strikers in this bout. And Jacoby Sanchez's gas tank can take over. Roberto Sanchez off of his back is very long, so I'm always worried when people get on top of him to try to ground and pound. He can throw something up in there. But I do feel like Sanchez, even if he gets on top, he'll just be able to keep swinging punches and win a decision. I don't see a finish coming. Nah, I could see a later finish for Jacoby Sanchez. Depending on their prices on DK, I might not go too heavy on either one of these fighters. What do you think happens in this one?
I don't know who the dirtiest Sanchez is. I am really only picking. Both guys have me up in the air. They're both kind of newer to the sport as far as what we know about them. So I'm going to go with the guy I know a little less about here. And I'm going to go with little furry Roberto Sanchez. So I'm going to split it down the middle with you and pick the other Sanchez. I probably won't have either Sanchez
in the cards. Anywhere. And their prices on DraftKings is going to be $8,200 for Jacoby, $8,000 for Roberto Sanchez. There's many other plays. Many, many other plays. You don't need to waste your time on that one for a decision type of about. Now we have another debuter coming off of the Contender Series at welterweight against Brian Camozzi, the worst of the two Camozzi brothers, dare I say that, unfortunately. And the Camozzi brothers aren't known to be good. So that's really unfortunate for Brian Camozzi.
He's the crappiest Mosey.
And the other Mosey's not in the UFC anymore. Exactly. So coming off of a two-fight losing streak to Chad Laprise in a TKO 7 months ago is Brian Camozzi with a 7-4 record. Prior to that, he also lost to Randy Brown TKO punches. This is make it or break it for Camozzi. He has to come out here and not just win a decision. I think he has to win decisively to keep a contract. Joffrey Neal is coming off of a win on the Contender Series, but he's been a longtime veteran of LFA. He's coming in with an 8-2 record. He has only lost one fight via knockout. And what I didn't like about Neal is that he tends to tuck his chin and throw very looping punches. He has a ton of power, an okay gas tank. He's incredibly strong for the division, very muscly. And I do see him slowing down. I saw him slowing down in the regional scenes. As he keeps progressing in this UFC roster, people are going to be able to exploit that. Unfortunately for Brian Camozzi, he is not going to be able to exploit that. He gets hit way too much, is serviceable on the ground, but doesn't really scare anybody there. Joffrey has a wrestling background, grappling background, doesn't like to stay there, likes to keep it standing either way, and throws heavy, heavy heat even when he's tired and has been able to finish people in the later rounds just because he goes for it. Eventually, that's not going to work for him, but for right now, I got Neal everywhere. I know he's debuting, but I'm fading Camozzi as much as I'm playing up Neal stylistically. I just see this has TKO finish round one written all day on it. How do you feel this one goes down?
I couldn't agree with you more. There are some things to worry about for me in this fight. One, Camozzi, not only do I think his chin's gone, but when you have a guy that is used to fighting at 185 pounds fighting your ass at 170, you go get knocked out, especially when the guy's called Hands of Steel at 185. He knocks out bigger guys all the time. He's going to knock out you. My worry here is I don't know how much Neil's fought at this weight, and so I'm wondering how rough his weight cut's going to be. Everyone, this is my red flag weight cut watch. Watch Jeffrey Neal going into this and see how you feel like he looks. Look at the backstage interviews, see if he's making sense. Sometimes we see the guys that have really rough weight cuts start talking crazy shit. But I couldn't agree with you more. I have Neal KO round one, and I will put him almost every card. And this is way more of a fade for Camozzi than an up talk for Neal, a guy I hardly know anything about. But one thing I will say going forward of this, everyone's going to be jumping on the Jeffrey Neal hype train after this fight because it's going to be a brutal knockout. Watch that. Watch that, because everything you're saying is true. It's just going to be a huge looping punch with a ton of power, and he's going to get clipped, and the other guy has no chin, so it don't matter.
Neal is $8,900 as a debuting fighter against Camozzi's $7,300.
That's a good pick. I'm surprised he's not over 9, because he's going to be worth over 100 points.
That's actually a good call. I'll probably end up putting him in a lot of places. On to the next bout, we have lightweight 155 bout, Carlos Diego Ferreira versus Jared Gordon. This is a really interesting stylistic matchup. Jared Gordon's coming in with a 14-1 record against Fiera's 12-2. Fiera only losing in the UFC. He's only lost to Benil Dariush 3 years ago, Dustin Poirier 2 years ago, and is coming off of a win against Aban Mercier in a decision 2 years ago. The reason that Fiera has actually... the reason he's been out for so long is he popped for steroids, so he had a 2-year suspension. So, this is someone to watch as well. He could be juiced to the tits, or legitimately off the juice.
And he's actually fighting out of our favorite juice to the tits country, Brazil.
So, it wouldn't be unlikely, but with that, Jared Gordon has a very high pace, really, really can take people into that next level. He does slow down a little bit, has okay power, good angles, really moves forward really, really well, and is on top, let's see. I just have so much to say about this because I'm looking at the lines right now, and this is a really, really unique fight that's going on right now. This is essentially the wrestler versus grappler. Fiera can keep it striking and be serviceable there. Doesn't have tons of power, but he makes his money on the ground. Gordon uses his wrestling in reverse to keep it standing and more win decisions. He can finish people and is beat people like Quiñones and Hakran Diaz, and really starts to wear you out with that pace. If he gets Fiera on the ground, or if Fiera gets him to the ground, I see Fiera winning this ground battle off of his back or on top decisively. I think Fiera's striking is underdeveloped. Not underdeveloped, it's undervalued. And I think that he puts together very clean combinations. He's been out for 2 years. He's been training for 2 years. People are saying really good things about him. And I really think I got the underdog here. Well, as far as Tapology, he's a huge underdog. Yeah, he's a
moderate favorite.
But when the lines came out last night, I put money on Fiera and he was the underdog. And it's already shot up to minus 255. So I don't know if Gordon is somehow, if people know something on the underground that we haven't got to yet, or if there's enough legitimate bettors that understand that Fiera here is actually a little bit better. It's all dependent on whether that juice is flowing. But I see the better fighter for myself in Fiera. He's like a Moraga. He's like a...
Gordon, it is 9-3 on...
9,300.
And Fiera is the least expensive, or the...
I think I found my wager gauger.
6-9.
I think I found my wager gauger.
6-9.
I have Fiera winning this decision, if not a submission in the later rounds. I think, as from what I've seen, it's there for Fiera. It's his fight to win or lose, and Gordon has to make that space up. The gas tanks are going to play a role in... Very interesting fight. It's so weird, because DraftKings has one thing... Tapology has Gordon as a heavy favorite, but the betting lines have a minus to almost a 3-1 favorite against Gordon. This is screwy all over it. There's something going on that we need to definitely research and tweet out once we figure out kind of what's going on. What do you feel goes on in this fight?
Impressive thing that Carlos Fiera has ever done to me is decision Aubin Mercier. It's 2 years ago. That was an Aubin Mercier fresh off the Tough House. He hadn't had nearly the experience. Like, Aubin Mercier has developed to be one of the guys to watch out for. I don't think he was one of those guys to me 2 years ago. Jared Gordon is this guy that's kind of creeping out. These are my favorite kind of hype trains, is the guys that you least expect. I actually like him in this fight so much. The bummer for me is I don't like him as the most expensive fighter of the night. I have Gordon winning by decision here. I just think he has a grind, and more so because I think he can take any punch that Carlos is going to throw at him.
Yep.
I'm not worried about him on his feet at all, and I'm not really worried about him getting submitted. The Hakran Diaz, he was such an underdog on that fight, and he really showed out and, just to take it to decision 3 months ago. That was a battle. I kind of see that working out a lot the same way. All that being said, Gordon, he gets like 120 points on DraftKings because sometimes, is that from finishes?
It must be
from the Quiñones fight where you knocked him out in the ground and pound. But yeah, and a high pace, throws a ton of punches. I think he's moving into his peak, and I think that Carlos Fiera, the game has passed him up. It is too long, and if he actually does show up clean, his body is not going to work the same as it did last time he was in the octagon. So I like Gordon here. I don't like Gordon for over 9,000 here. I see this fight going to decision. I see him being worth like 70 points in a win. So as much as I like him, I'm only going to pepper him. And I actually agree with you, because I see it going to decision and Fiera's only 6-9. I think that's a smart wager gauger of peppering him through it. I don't see him getting finished.
So even if he gets 30 points for 6-9, he's going to allow you to stack up everybody else. Notably, Fiera's had his camp out of Silverbacks. I think that's Derek Lewis gym coming out of McAllen, Texas. So he's going to be the local boy here in this position.
And so, yeah, I like Gordon decision. I probably won't put him too many places, and I like your wager gauger on Fiera on that. And before we move on to the main card, make sure you're liking and subscribing and following and going to the Twitter and Lesbo and the Bean and going to the .com with the Lesbo and the Bean and going to the Facebook with the Lesbo and the Bean. Thank you.
On to the main card, we have Sage Northcutt versus Thibaut Gaudy. With Sage Northcutt, we've seen the UFC trying to really give him as many wins as possible, and he has not really come through. He, as of late, since he switched over to Team Alpha Male, he's looked much, much better. He's coming in with a 9-2 record, only losing in the UFC against Gaudi's 12-3. Gaudi's losses only coming in the UFC as well. He had 3 in a row losses to Paclin, who's no longer in the UFC, Avan Mercier, rear naked choke, Laprise, TKO punches, and then has come off a win against Andrew Holbrook 5 months ago. The thing with Holbrook is everybody knows that that dude does not have a chin at all. And Gaudi tends to be a striker, kickboxing, coming out of that France scene, but has been fighting out of Safset Fight Team. I wonder if he's still at France. We know what Northcutt has been doing. He's definitely been growing leaps and bounds at 21 years old. The sky is still the limit. With the 30-year-old Gaudi, he does like to do that Czech Congo stand-up style. Not that good of a ground game. But against Northcutt, doesn't have to worry about it as much. Northcutt is throwing more takedowns in there. I don't believe Gaudi's going to throw any takedowns in there. And as I was saying before, UFC has really started to... hasn't started. They've been giving what they believe to be favorable matchups for Northcutt. And I think that's...
I'm like, will you please stop shoving Sage down my throat?
Exactly. So they think he can win this fight. But for the minus 275 favorite, that's way too much for me. Northcutt is still not proven enough to me to be a 3-1 favorite against a lot of people. And if Gaudi... Northcutt can get hurt in fights. He is looking better. I'm going to go with Northcutt decision. I'm not as decisive about it. I'm not going to put him on my parlays everywhere, and I'm not going to put him on all my DraftKings cards because Northcutt can very easily just win a decision here. I don't think the finish comes. I got decision Northcutt. It's going to be low scoring. I think the price is off here. I think Gaudi deserves a little more respect than people are giving him.
I would like to say the price is off, and I'm not a super Sage Northcutt fan, but I think if a guy wants to stand with Sage, especially when they're in this lower echelon of the UFC, they're going to have a hard time. I see this fight as a setup for Super Sage all day. You got a Texas audience. You got him as the first fight of the main card. This is perfect for the kids. Make all the girlies tune into a Fox fight night. It's Gaudi. It's not to take away anything from him. Super Sage is just good on his feet. He has crisp punches. He's getting better every time. His ground game is getting better because of Alpha Male. And the only thing I'm ever worried about Sage in with these lesser guys is a guy with crazy jiu-jitsu. I don't even think Mickey Gall's all that great. He just has a killer jiu-jitsu ground game. I like Sage here. How much is he on DraftKings? I think it's going to be depressing. It's probably going to be a little...
Sage is 9-2, the second most expensive.
Damn it. I do see him getting a finish in round 2 before his cardio pops because he always has a third round cardio crash.
Yep.
I do actually see him getting the finish here against Gaudi. I think this is a setup fight by the WME players for their favorite boys.
If you pick Ferreira... you're going to be able to afford it.
I can afford Northcutt if I get Fiera. So I'm going to have Sage here for a knockout in round 2 right before he blows that cardio wad.
On to the featherweights, we have debuting Steve Pearson coming out of the McKinney fight team out of Texas against Brandon Davis, who is an 8-4, coming off of a loss in his debut against Kyle Bochniak. Peterson is coming in with a 16-6 record. Again, this being his debut, winning his last fight via TKO. Davis losing to Bochniak in a decision less than a month ago. I feel like he's getting more out of his training camp and just saying, like, I'm ready to go. I'm willing to fight anyone. I took minimal damage. It was pretty much just a sparring match that we had and nobody got really hurt. Davis, I do feel like, has a little bit more power on his punches, but does tend to be the more looping and slower fighter into the rounds. Peterson making his debut. What he's shown on the regional stuff is he has an okay gas tank, good on the ground, good standing, definitely likes to keep it standing as well. Doesn't have as much power, but has better angles and can really put an okay pace on people. Again, when these guys, though, make it to the UFC, that gas tank either goes because of the bright lights or the caliber is just that much better. Though fighting out of LFA, they do know how to get people ready for the UFC better than most people. I am staying away from this fight because both guys are so fresh. I don't think that they should even be on the main card. This deserves to be on the fight pass. And I have the local boy, Peterson, strictly because he's out of Texas. And I think it's more of a point decision. I think this is a decision fight. I'm not going to put either fighter anywhere, but I have Peterson decision. How do you feel this one goes down? I'm staying away.
I feel like from your mouth to God's ears. That's everything. I have Peterson decision. I don't think either fighter is UFC caliber. I'm not excited about either guy going forward. A win for either guy doesn't do anything exciting about who they fight next. Potentially, these are both guys, and they're too small to fight Sage. So I really don't see a reason that we're keeping either of these guys in the UFC. I can't believe it's on the main card. Right. I can look at least two other fights that could have taken this one spot. I'm going to have Peterson decision.
Do you even care about DraftKings line?
You can tell it to me, yeah.
I'm just wondering because I know I'm not going to put either one of these fighters on here. We have, let's see here. What are their names?
Peterson.
Davis is 8-7 against Peterson's 7-5. Interesting.
I don't see a finish coming for me Davis either. Enough that I could see me scattering Peterson just to be able to afford some other folk.
Another one here or there. So you have Peterson decision
Peterson
right now?
Peterson decision as well.
Okay. On to Thiago Alves versus Curtis Mildred. Mildred's debuting in the UFC. He does have some Bellator experience with a 14-3 record against the 22-11 Thiago Alves. Alves coming out of that American top team, being 34 years old. He's definitely been in it as long as anybody, if not longer. He's one of the really old dogs now, even though he's fairly young. He was in there being the number one contender against Matt Hughes back in the day, and he's still fighting, coming off of multiple injuries, brain surgeries, and has slowed down a lot in his career. His striking is where he makes his money. His takedown defense has always been elite, Thiago Alves is, but the veteranship also is in his corner. For Curtis, he comes in with a lot of power, is very standing-centric, throws very unique styles, has tons of power, spins all over you. His gas tank, though, does tend to fold a little bit for me. He slows down a lot by the third round and isn't it quite as elusive. On the ground, either fighter doesn't really do much that I can remember off the top, and this is going to stay a kickboxing match. Both of these guys like to keep it standing. The interesting thing here is I'm trying to fade Thiago Alves in a lot of his fights. He just beat Patrick Cote, but lost two to Miller and Condon. He was pieced apart by Jordan Mean as well until he got that body kick finish 3 years ago, but has really had multiple injuries. His last fight coming 10 months ago via decision to Cote. Cote retired after that fight and he barely lost it. Alves can make this into a decision point fight and win a point fight because he's the better striker. He has the better ring IQ, but I think the blitzing style and just the young 30-year-old, 4 years younger, but not as worn, seasonally worn as Thiago Alves. I just think Alves has decreased everywhere a little bit, and it's much like the Yoel Romero versus Rockhold, where Rockhold's the better fighter, but Yoel's going to win that fight. I see the same thing happening for Milstead. I don't know if it's a finish. I'll go decision. I'm not going to put this in a lot of places. I know Milstead's an underdog here, and I see rightly so why he is an underdog. The craftsmanship by leaps and bounds go to Alves. It's whether the body can hold up for him. How do you feel this one goes down?
Courteous Curtis Melinder. I really like this guy. And this really, if he was going against somebody that was going to threaten a takedown on him, I would be very iffy on this pick. But I have been waiting to fade Thiago as well. He's not fighting out of Brazil. He is a guy that's, you know, in the Florida scene. So he is tested more regular than a lot of the other guys we give shit to. The head kicks for Melinder, if he had to worry a takedown to throw those kicks, I don't like him in this fight. I agree with what you said. The Pipple is not going to threaten those takedowns. He is going to keep it standing, more of a kickboxing style match. So really this pick is, my brain says to pick Thiago because he obviously has the experience and the octagon IQ. But I'm going to pick Curtis here. I think the UFC is smart with when they release guys. This guy is, you know, third on the main card for a reason. I think he's a good Texas explosion. I like Melinder. I think he's going to get the KO in round two, and that's hard to pull off against Thiago. It's been a long time since he's been knocked out. I just see it. If Thiago's going to keep it standing, he's going to get knocked out by the courteous one.
Interesting.
So I will put Curtis on some things, and that's weird for me because he is a new fighter, and I will probably have my
season guy. And Alves is actually the favorite on DraftKings at 8,600 against Mildred's 7-6.
I love that.
I'm going to be able to make a lot of cards this weekend. On to one of my favorite fighters in the UFC. We have James Vick at 155 pounds against Francisco Trinaldo. Really interesting stuff's been happening with Vick. Vick is 12-1 against Trinaldo's 22-5. Trinaldo, being 39 years old, is ancient in there and has only lost to top caliber fighters. Kevin Lee being one of those. I picked Kevin Lee in that fight, but it was not easy to get that win. Trinaldo's coming off of a win against Jim Miller 3 months ago, and James Vick has rattled off a 3-fight winning streak against Joe Duffy, big underdog for us that we had here.
It was a Leslie Smith pick.
Yo. Then we had him beating also Polo Reyes and Abel Trujillo he beat. The only loss for Vick in the entire UFC, his whole career, has been against Beneil Dariush. And the reason we don't see Vick as much is he has had a few injuries, but he also can't get anybody to sign a contract. He was specifically talking about this all week long on other shows. Like, I've had 5-6 guys all drop the contract as soon as it hits it. And it makes sense. Vick is a Golden Gloves boxer, has nasty, nasty ground game, has a good gas tank, is a fucking monster at 6'3", 6'4", at 155 pounds.
They start studying that tape and they're like, oh shit.
He has... uses his length not only in his striking, but on the ground. The reason he's so crafty on the ground is because he can do stuff that, like John Jones. Even though I don't want to compare him to John Jones, I'm comparing him to the length.
Why? Because he's white?
Because he's long and gangly as fuck. So he can wrap that neck in situations that other people can't, and he's done it to multiple people as well. Trinaldo, though, hits like a ton of bricks, has an amazing gas tank, and is a more than serviceable kickboxer. On the ground, he has so much power that he's been able to finish submissions that other people can't just because he rips your goddamn arms off. Trinaldo, we've said it before, is a chimp. He's built like a chimp, and I don't mean that degradingly.
Where does he fight out of?
Brazil. Actually, he's fighting, out of Brazil. And we've always said, wow, he's 39 years old and has a body like that. Wouldn't be surprised if the juice is flowing. So, in that Lee fight, I think is a lot like, well, not a lot like this, but I feel like James Vick in this is in the same situation where he's going to be able to get the win, but he's going to go through some hairy-ass spots. When Beneil Dariush beat James Vick, it was an overhand right that hit heavy and hard, and James Vick couldn't take it. Trinaldo can emulate that strike really easily. He's that level of striker, and he has that amount of power. Look at all the Trinaldo's fight. He hits so hard, and he has a good gas tank, which is why Trinaldo has trouble finding fights as well. For me, I am going to go with James Vick, but I'm also warning people, minus 225 is too much. This should be like a minus 140 James Vick. Trinaldo is dangerous as fuck here, even on the ground. It's not going to be an easy fight. I'm giving it to James Vick. I could see a submission in the second or third round, but I could also see a TKO round one for Trinaldo in this. So I'm going to speckle Vick in there. I'm going to speckle Trinaldo in there because if he comes through, he's going to come through big. It's not going to be just a boring-ass decision. But the guy here for me is James Vick. How do you feel this one goes down? Decision for me.
James Vick is a real hype train. We've been hot on him forever, and there's a reason. Trinaldo is a guy that, for all intents and purposes, his age says that he should be out of the UFC. We're going to see him be this like Brazilian Dan Henderson for a while. I just think James Vick is advanced. He is growing leaps and bounds. He has a really awkward style. He has super long limbs. He has 6-inch reach advantage just in his arms. He has, you know, he's 5-6 inches taller than the guy. He's just going to be long everywhere. I think he keeps Trinaldo away from him. I could see him winning a decision here. I just think by that third round, even into the second round, Vic's cardio is amazing and he will easily out cardio Trinaldo, where I could see the submission coming, but I just think he's going to be tricky somewhere with some elbows. His combinations are getting better and better. I'm actually changing it to Vic's submission, not because I just don't think his combinations are going to be enough to knock out Trinaldo, but Trinaldo will give up his back in the third. So I'm going to put Vic submission round three. I will have him on cards. I won't have Trinaldo anywhere, but I do also agree with you. He's a little overpriced just because I like to make money off Vic. How come you're all seeing what we're seeing?
All of a sudden. So on to the co-main event. We have the big boy showing up.
Yay! I missed the Derek Lewis.
Actually, real quick, sorry. Sorry to get your ego up a little bit. The DraftKings lines real quick. DraftKings, James Vick is 9,000 against Trinaldo's 7-2. Again, I see that skewed. That should be like an 8-2, 8-2, 8-2, 8,000.
I agree.
It's a little much for Vick. But we can afford so many other fighters on this card. I feel like I might be able to still put Vick with a couple other people on there. So, on to the co-main event. The big boys are coming through. We have Derek Lewis versus Marcin Tybura. These boys are definitely swinging somewhat heavy. The Polish fighter with a 16-3 record has had multiple fights in the UFC, only losing to Timothy Johnson and Fabricio Werdum in a decision 2 months ago. He beat people as of Andre Arlovsky, Luis Henrique, and Victor Pesta. All those fighters are... I mean, Fabricio Werdum by far is the best fighter that he's fought. And going to decision with Werdum is serviceable, but that was a really boring fight. Both guys just mainly stayed standing. Tybura never tried to get to the ground. Werdum.
And it wasn't the best looking for Fabricio.
Exactly.
He had fought like 3 times in 6 months in that little frame of time. And that was the worst looking out of any of his ventures.
Right. Tybura knocking out Luis Henrique, it was a ground and pound accumulation of shots. But the fact that most people aren't finishing Andre Arlovsky at this point in his career always highlights for me, like, does he have power or not? Well, we don't have to worry about with power with Derek Lewis being 18-5. Derek Lewis is coming off of a loss to Mark Hunt TKO punches, standing TKO, not fully out. But he rattled off 4 wins prior to that, finishing most people, winning a split decision over Roy Nelson, but pretty much mopping up everyone else. The better striker here, Marcin Tybura. He really is. Derek Lewis has gotten his back. His back has really affected him in that Mark Hunt fight. That's why he retired. He was just like, I couldn't even stand in there. He's had all these issues. Derek Lewis also has been known to eat ribs and chicken literally 45 minutes before his fight, which most athletes are like, you're fucking crazy. And he does it regularly. It's a ritual of his. He is the local boy, coming also out of Silverbacks, Houston native. The biggest pop of the night is gonna be for Derek Lewis. With Tybura being a better striker and having a better gas tank, Derek Lewis is one of these guys that has been losing many, many of his fights and is willing to eat 5 shots to be able to land that one shot because he has enough confidence in his chin and his hand to knock out the other fighter. I feel like that's exactly what's going to happen here. This is going to be a Yoel Romero, Luke Rockhold moment. Better fighter is Tybura here. The power just needs to land once for Derek Lewis, and Derek Lewis is able to, in the third round, still throw those heavy shots and put together blitzes that a lot of other heavyweights can't. So I do have Derek Lewis TKO. He's actually the slight underdog on the betting lines right now. Evil Twin is all over Tybura. He thinks I'm crazy by going with Lewis, but as I'm saying, he's going to eat a couple shots, land one, and I got TKO round 3-4. Derek Lewis, I'm going with the underdog here. How do you feel this one goes down?
I don't like Lewis's gas tank to knock him out in round 3, but I do like it to knock him out in round 2. The reason I liked Derek Lewis here, one, I love the Black Beast. I think he's the funniest MMA fighter to follow on Twitter. He just cracks me up. I think he has a good heart. He's a perfect guy for Texas. He's a perfect guy for America. All that being said, he has great takedown defense. Tybura, one of the things that he does so great is he has a heavy ground and pound. He's such a big guy, gets on top of him and does that kind of... I'm not worried about that with Derek Lewis. He actually has a really good sprawl. He has good takedown defense. And if he does get down, he's wormy for a huge guy. He'll worm his way right back up to the cage and get back up. And even while somebody's trying to get him down, Derek Lewis has enough power in his hands to knock you out on that attempt. From an odd angle, he can still get enough power in his punches. He is such unconventional. You wouldn't say Derek Lewis is a wrestler. Is he a boxer? Is he jiu-jitsu? You don't even know. He's a street fighter. Derek Lewis is a street fighter, and he's going to come out in front of his people in Texas. He's not getting knocked out. Tabura does not have hands like Mark Hunt, and Mark Hunt, like you said, it was a standing TKO. It wasn't a full knockout for Derek Lewis, so I do like his chin here. I think Derek Lewis is going to win this by a KO because I think he's going to call out Ngannou in the ring. I see it all happening, and it might happen in Texas. That rematch might happen in Texas. I think that's a great pay-per-view fight. I think both of these guys has built up enough lure that it could even make Derek Lewis a favorite and avoiding that Ngannou punch. I think this is all just a story to build up Derek Lewis for Ngannou for his next fight. Lewis KO round two, which I don't need to look too much forward. That could be our Leslie Smith underdog pick. It does depend on how we feel about the next fight going forward.
Right,
but
So we have Tabura at 8,300 on DraftKings against Derek Lewis, 7,900. I'm not going to have a trouble picking my cards this weekend.
Me either.
I feel like I have a ton of underdogs that really have real shots. I'm not just bullshitting here.
Do we love the Black Beast too much before we go forward? I just
want to... Are we clouded judgment?
Are we clouded by our love for the Black
Supposedly
Beast?
Supposedly he's gotten his back better.
That's all I need to know.
Right?
That's all I need to know.
And he actually... Because he never told anyone. And once the UFC's like, you have what? We got back guys. Cody Garbrandt's gotten his... Multiple guys. Like, they know how to deal with back issues. So... On to the main event, we have...
We need Derek Lewis, saving Texas one person at a time.
Donald Cerrone versus Yancy Medeiros.
Bum, 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 bum.
Is the main event. This is definitely the names coming in. The cowboy himself against the kid, Yancy. Cerrone being 34 to the 30-year-old Medeiros. Yancy Medeiros is coming in with a 15-4 record coming off of a 3-fight winning streak. Against Donald Cerrone's 32-10 coming off of a 3-fight losing streak. Now, Donald Cerrone has been at a super top level for long, and we've been all over Donald Cerrone for a very long time.
All over fading him.
Unfortunately.
I feel like we picked those last three fights. We've made our underdog picks from it.
Every single night, and it's because Donald Cerrone has lost to Jorge Masvidal TKO, which we called Robbie Lawler decision. I may have had Cerrone, maybe not. And then we were all over Darren Till TKO because of...
We were the first Darren Till hype train builders.
Right. We thought he had taken a beating regardless against Lawler. And it was true. Darren Till was able to get him out of there. And 3 months ago, Donald Cerrone got knocked the fuck out.
Cold.
His nose was completely... That nose hasn't healed yet. There's absolutely no way.
Haven't we learned anything from Rory McDonald? Haven't we learned anything from Rory McDonald, Mr. Soft Nose?
So... To me, the better striker here, Donald Cerrone. The gas tanks are equivalent.
I think Donald's kicks, but I don't know about full strikes.
I think both of these guys take damage in their fights, but I think that Medeiros takes a bit more, but the Hawaiian chin has
that
always
old Medeiros
been,
took more.
Well,
old Medeiros.
Old Medeiros at 155 also was where his chin issues were.
Yeah.
Once he's moved to 17, he was in one of the fight of the years against Alex Oliveira 2 months ago. God damn it! 2 months ago, he was in a brutal fucking fight where he was almost finished 3 times as well. Almost finished. God dang it! This is so sketchy.
Here's what I don't like. I don't like Donald at 170. Here's what I don't like. I don't like Yancy fighting on a card without Max Holloway. All these three wins are all Max Holloway wins.
He was there with him.
Yeah. This loss against Trinaldo, that was a Yancy, a lone Yancy. A lone Yancy. I hate to say this. I'm a fan. Cowboy's done in the UFC. Cowboy's more done in the UFC than Luke Rockhold, in my opinion. There's only gimme fights for Cowboy at this point. You only have Cowboy there because he will fill a seat. People love him. I'll love him. I'll go and see him. But I'll hate to watch him lose in person. I don't know who you give Cowboy. I don't want to see him at 170 anymore. If he wants to go back to 155, maybe.
He can't do that anymore. He said it. Like, he can't cut that anymore.
Oh, I thought he was fine cutting the weight. I thought it was the UFC's decision.
I think he says that because he's willing to fight anybody anywhere and doesn't...
I thought he never missed weight or never had a cut. He never had any of these, like, body shutdown
maybe
issues.
Maybe I was wrong, but I thought he was like, oh, I like to drink a little too much beer. And it's,
oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that makes
later
sense.
Later on in his career. Exactly. So, I really don't like the short fight for Medeiros and also the short fight for Cerrone. Cerrone was knocked out a month before. Brutally. The more brutal finish. I got Yancy Madero here. He's the underdog. I have too many underdogs tonight. I got too much money on this. I got Madero's TKO round one. And it's because, as you're saying, it's time to get on out of here, Donald Cerrone, and I fucking love you. You're my hero. I was watching you WEC. I was watching you all your under. I've been watching Donald Cerrone's career and looked into his background. More so than
I don't want head trauma anymore right? than Donald Cerrone already has.
Run BMF Ranch.
I want to be excited every time I see him in the octagon and screaming out to another fighter. I want that. I would love for him to get like a repertoire of hot chicks, and I don't mean hot sexy. I just mean bomb-ass talent coming through his gym. I'd love to see some BMF chicks fighting. I'd love to see some BMF young up-and-comers. I want to see for BMF Ranch what Alpha Male has done. I want that to happen for Donald. I don't want to see him in the octagon anymore. I think he's beautiful, but I think he's figured out. I think people know how to paint like Donald paints. He's an artist, but people have figured out that stroke.
So if Max, because he's injured right now, so he could travel and do all that shit. If he's in Yancy's corner, are you
going to... I already have Medeiros KO round one. I have Medeiros KO round one. I think he's figured out his stride. I think he is in the prime of his career right now. I think he is a guy that with... This is the perfect thing to build hype behind his name to get him one of those top 10 fights. Well,
it brings that much fighters when they go to Hawaii. Wait, fucking... That fight's off now.
What, the Hawaiian fight?
Max being there.
You know, I don't even care about the Max Edgar fight. I never really wanted to see it. I have no
But it was
going to
be in Hawaii, right?
Yeah, no. It was supposed to happen at 222, I think. I think it's supposed to be this next one. They're talking about the next one, though, but Max, they're working with the commission to get it to Hawaii, but I don't know if it is supposed to be in Hawaii or not. That would be really disappointing if they finally got it there.
And Max is in it.
I'm almost positive it's not. The Brian Ortega...
I think you're right.
I think it's 2-2-2. Yeah, this is really just a full fade on Cowboy. His last win is against Matt Brown, who I think should have retired five fights before that, so... Yancy is on the up and coming. I'm going with the kid here. KO round one. If he is an underdog, I'm going to put him on everything.
Me too. And he is 8,400 for Donald Cerrone. And
I feel more confident about that underdog over the Derek Lewis. But yeah, I'm going to have them both everywhere.
I agree with that.
Here's what this could be the first time ever.
Double Wage Gija?
No, double Leslie Smith underdog picks.
Ooh, that's a lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure. We're like 89% with our Leslie Smith underdog picks. I feel pretty confident about it. I do not see Marcin Tybura or Cowboy Cerrone walking out of these octagons.
On their own 2 feet.
Yeah.
All right, we're doing it. We got two for the first time ever. If you're making any bets anywhere and you're listening to us, you're going to be making money. And you better subscribe and retweet after you heard it here first. And we're giving you these solid lines. I see a shit ton of other underdogs throughout the entire night. This is going to be a sketchy ass night, though. This can either be a perfect night of fights or having that really high 90%, or it could be you get two fights right. Like, this is going to be...
Crazy.
Or
you're going to be sitting with 10 right and the only one, where you're like a lone ship in the... Where you're like, whoa, I didn't even get all winners on my cards, and I still made money on every one.
Yep.
It's going to be a weird night of fights. Make sure you like and subscribe everywhere. LesboandTheBean.com.
Lesbo and the Bean!